Please call the case.
Case number SCWC 15342, State versus King. Arguing for petitioner, Jason M. Cranberg. Arguing for respondent, Stephen K. Tsushima. Argument on the merits.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Cranberg and Mr. Tsushima. Are you both ready to proceed today?
Yes.
All right. Mr. Cranberg, you've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning light with 5 minutes to go. Mr. Tsushima, we will give you a warning with 10 minutes to go in your argument. Please proceed.
May it please the court. Deputy Public Defender Jason Cranberg on behalf of Petitioner Defendant Appellee Rudolph King Jr. Your Honor, the issue in this case is whether the conduct in question, Mr. King's conduct, which is shoplifting and criminal trespass on premises that are open to the public, falls within the parameters of the burglary statute when construed in light of the purpose for which it was enacted. Our position is that despite the plain language, even if the plain language of the burglary statute is clear, this court can nevertheless consider the legislative history to ensure its interpretation of the statute does not produce an absurd result contrary to legislative intent. Intend that that was not done below with the IC opinion. However, if this court does choose to embark on that analysis, our position is the end result will be obvious that two separate acts, two petty misdemeanors together does not equal a Class C felony. And we would specifically note that
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Cranberg, but while you're on that issue as to the interpretation of the burglary statute,
yes.
708.811, the language anticipates that a person charged with burglary has been given a lawful order. It says defies a lawful order not to enter or remain. Right?
That is true.
Okay. Now, I think it's straightforward, but let me ask you, is it clear that a person who is in their home that has an individual enter the home when the homeowner says you have to leave and the individual stays and takes something from the home, that would qualify under 708.811. The owner has said leave. The defendant doesn't and takes something, and so that would be kind of a burglary, right? Maybe not a classic burglary, but a burglary.
Under that example, is this person's initial entry lawful or unlawful? As they entered the house, invited, and then was asked to leave, and then they didn't leave, and then didn't even committed a crime, that would be burglary.
Either way, they're there, they're told to leave, they don't leave, and then they take something that they're not theirs.
Yes, what distinguishes this case is that it's commercial premises that are at the time open to the public.
So that's the distinction that you're making, because in this case, there is similarly a private business that has instructed the defendant not to be on the premises, arguably, right?
Yes, Your Honor. This distinguishing factor is the nature of the building itself, the character of the building as defined in Chapter 708-800 and included in the burglary statute.
Okay, so what's the difference?
So if we look to the definition of building.
From the legislature's intent, why couldn't the legislature, wouldn't the legislature intend for the same analysis to apply with respect to the instruction that was given pursuant to I guess you could say criminal trespass in the second degree, but the instruction that was given by the supermarket to the defendant after he stole a Reese's candy bar.
And If this court does find that a lawful order does apply to a notice of trespass issued pursuant to the criminal trespass statute, then the issue would then become the scope of that lawful order, which is ambiguous as defined in the definition of interim remain unlawfully. However, I'm putting forth that before we even get to that analysis, we must look at the original burglary language in terms of the premises which are protected under the statute and whether or not commercial premises open to the public would then be the equivalent of a building. And we would suggest that a building as used in the burglary statute and as defined in Chapter 708 includes protected spaces.
Okay, but 708-800 says, defines enter or remain unlawfully as entering onto premises that are open to the public when the person defies a lawful order not to enter or remain that's personally communicated by the owner or some other authorized person. That's sort of a paraphrase. Is that, what is it about the trespass order? It doesn't the trespass order fully comply with that definition? And if not, why not?
Arguably under the plain language it does.
Under the plain language it does? The plain language of the statute says, for the purposes of this paragraph, and then it defines reasonable warning of request. So the plain language limits on its face the warning, which is a warning and not an order. It says, for the purposes of this paragraph, reasonable warning or request means, and then it gives a definition, and it confines it to that very specific commercial criminal trespass in the second degree.
Yes, Your Honor, and that is what I did argue before the circuit court originally and was a basis for granting the motion originally.
So,
I'm sorry. I don't have a mic, so I have to use the CJs. They're trying to shut me up. It's not working. let me ask you this about the specific trespass warning that Mr. King was issued. He's advised that his presence is no longer desired, and he's warned that this the violation of this warning will subject you to arrest and prosecution for trespassing. Does he need to have notice that he's going to be prosecuted for burglary if he comes back and takes something when he's there?
If that was included in the plain language of the statute, certainly yes. However, because it's not, we don't think that the legislature intended to apply that particular notice to burglary.
In fact, in follow-up Justice Montgomery's question, the statute itself says, the warning actually tracks exactly what the statute says. It says that if you violate the warning, you'll be subjected to arrest and prosecution for trespass.
That is our position. The legislature had intended it to apply to burglary. You could have put it in the plain language.
And there's no reference in 708, the commercial trespass, to 708-800's definition of a lawful order. There's no connection either way from one to the other.
Yes, and it appeared that the state was relying upon the violation of that trespass warning to show or to meet the elements of unlawful entry to satisfy the burglary. So that's where we would...
Well, wholly apart from why it was issued or pursuant to what statute, why doesn't the notice as provided to the defendant meet the requirements of 708-800?
It's not the defendant's objective state of mind that would define the offense. It would be the legislature and how they draft the statute. So again, the legislature put that in the plain language.
Well, it says, when the person defies a lawful order not to enter or remain personally communicated by the owner or some other authorized person, how is the notice that was given to him, to the defendant, not compliant with that?
I don't know if it's a fair notice. It does inform him that he would be prosecuted for criminal trespass, which is a petty misdemeanor, 30 days. It says nothing about, hey, you know, if you come in here and you shoplift, you're going to be looking at 5 years prison.
I have a follow-up question. In terms of 708-814, the warning is for commercial premises, and it says person enters commercial after a reasonable warning or request to leave by the owner or lessee of the commercial premises. And subsection 1 says a warning statement advising it, the warning for purposes of this paragraph, reasonable warning or request means a warning or request communicated in writing, da-di-da, which may contain but is not limited to the following information. So it's not, it doesn't really dictate exactly what has to be in the warning, but it says the warning may contain a warning statement advising the person that the person's presence is no longer desired on the property for a period of 1 year. And so I noticed that this warning is his original shoplifting was in Times Kaimuki. And the warning said, don't come to any of our Times markets, supermarkets, here, 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 here. And this one was on Times McCully. The burglary charge was for shoplifting at Times McCully. So my question then is this allowed under the statute? It does say on the property. And I'm just wondering, so let's say that, you know, this is a GGP that owns Ala Moana and says, you know what, you're no longer wanted on Ala Moana, and in fact, you can no longer come to, you know, Ward Warehouse and all of the other shopping centers. I think they own a lot of them on this island now. You can't come to any of our shopping centers, including all of this. So this would be proper under the statute?
It, obviously our position would be that it is not, and or it is ambiguous, and we should then apply the rule.
Doesn't this statute say on the property for a period of 1 year? But owners can say, you know what, we own, you know, all the shopping centers, and you can't come to any of them.
Correct, and again, that was an argument that was made to the circuit court in terms of if we were going to be interpreting, comparing the two, we needed to address that issue in terms of whether or not a property owner does then. Well, certainly they would have the right to exclude the person from their properties. However, whether or not that would then qualify for application of the burglary statute, as because of the plain language of the notice itself, limits it to property. So, again...
So did you argue below that
yes.
It doesn't even apply to Times McCully?
Yes.
For purposes of the burglary statute or... With regard to the trespass statute as well, wouldn't that same argument apply to both statutes?
Yes.
So they couldn't prosecute him for a trespass either.
Yes, it was made in reference to the criminal trespass statute and in reference to the definition of injury remain unlawful. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Kramberg, the warning does say you're not allowed to enter the premises listed above, and it does list the other Times supermarkets. Isn't that,
that is
a warning?
But the issue is whether or not that's even allowed under the statute.
Yes.
It's no longer desired on the premises above.
Because if this is allowed, this means that GGP Ala Moana, GGP, could exclude people from all of the shopping centers that they own on this island.
And not even on just Oahu, but on other islands as well, as there are Times supermarkets, I believe, Maui, they're listed on the back of the warning.
But if this charge arose from the same Times, your position would still be that this notice was inadequate? Is that correct?
It would be a different argument in terms of why it doesn't apply or why it's ambiguous. But that would certainly, if it had met that same property, then obviously I don't think we would have an issue. So the plain language of the statute appears to limit it to one property. I would also note that the plain language plain language of the criminal trespass statute notices that, plainly states that it's a reasonable request or warning to leave is made. So in this instance, when Mr. King entered Times Supermarket on December 2014, he was never asked to leave. In fact, he was allowed to enter walking around the store as he was watched, and subsequently when he left, he was then arrested. So he was never even under the plain language of the criminal trespass statute. If you enter, then you should be asked to leave. And that was never...
Well, he could have been arrested as soon as he entered the premises.
Yes.
Instead, I guess an argument can be made that this provides some incentive to delay arrest on individuals despite their description and despite the purpose of the statute, which was to allow the owners of commercial premises to have these people not on the premises. You can just delay it, wait for the person to make any indication that they might intend to shoplift and then arrest them for burglary. I mean, it gives the shop owner enormous ability to determine what the offense will be by just waiting. And if I remember right, according to the trespass warning form, was this individual 6'5"?
Yes, he's a big gentleman.
So, I mean, presumably, this would not have been a difficult person to identify once they entered the premises with the description that they have.
Now, Mr. Kramberg, just to... If you wouldn't help, if you could help me complete this thought, I know your position is that under the facts of this case where you have a warning that's been provided, a specific warning pursuant to 708.814, which is the offense of criminal trespass in the second degree, you're only talking about a warning. But let's assume that instead of just warning Mr. King, he's convicted. Well, that's quite an order, quite a statement, right? It's a formally determined, court-sanctioned demonstration that he's committed an offense. So in that instance, do you think if he were to engage in the same conduct that he did here, which is to return, let's say, to that store and to take another item like the meat that he took, that then he could be charged with burglary under 708.811?
The difficulty with applying a court order, let's say, as part of a sentence if he gets convicted of the criminal trespass, is that that would then not meet either definition because under a lawful order, under the interim remand, must be personally communicated by the owner, or I guess we're assuming that the judge in that case is an authorized person.
Well, it says the owner of the premises or some other authorized person.
Correct.
The court, you might argue that the court falls in that category, right? Authorized to give directions such as the direction that would be implied from finding him guilty of this offense of criminal trespass in the second degree.
And then we would be applying in a different definition.
That wouldn't include the court.
That wouldn't include the criminal trespass warning. We're talking about, I apologize, two separate orders, a court order based on a conviction of a trespass warning.
Now, what's unusual about this is we're talking about conviction, but it would appear that you can be subject to this statute and be subject to a prosecution for burglary if you've been if you're homeless and you're asked to leave the commercial premises of a market. Suppose that, you know, Times or some other market decides, we don't want this person around. They can simply issue one of these trespass warnings. We don't want you here. And if the person comes back and they can prove any intent to shoplift, then burglary.
Yes, and under the plain language, don't think that it includes such a wide scope for the burglary statute. If we use that language, that is one of the results.
And clearly the legislature, when they enacted this statute and when they did the amendments in the late 90s, never mentioned the word burglary.
We'll come back to the plain. What's your plain language argument?
Plain language argument in terms of it.
Why? What's the plain language argument that because there's a possibility for issuing orders to folks for things other than criminal conduct, for whatever reason the landowner decides to exclude them from their property, you said there was a plain language argument that would not be encompassed within the burglary statute? Or did I misunderstand?
Well, it would be a fair notice argument. I mean, arguably, that's what essentially can happen, and it doesn't appear that that was intended by the legislature, to grant property owners such wide discretion in terms of being able to charge people with burglary as opposed to the underlying criminal trespass, which is 30 days, and then any additional offense that a person may commit on their property, such as disorderly conduct, harassment. There's nothing preventing a property owner from doing that. It's just there's a big difference between 30 days and 30 days versus 5 years prison. And would also note that if we look at the, we have to look at the entire chapter 708, and it was originally created in 1972, and in terms of property offenses, it created significant new law in several respects. And most importantly is that it provided the most severe, it authorized the most severe penalties for those offenses that were most likely to cause personal danger or harm. So in terms of the legislative intent, they have shown that violation of a criminal trespass by the nature of the offense being a petty misdemeanor deserves less culpability.
And I'm sorry, go ahead, Justice Pollack.
Did the ICA address your lenity argument?
They did not. They chose to rely solely on the plain language of the statute.
What is your lenity argument?
The lenity argument is that if it is considered under the plain language, that it creates an absurd result, much similar to this court's opinion in State v. Bautista.
Does it have to be absurd? I thought lenity went to ambiguity.
Oh, yes, in terms of, I apologize. It is ambiguous as to whether or not it applies. Whether the, well, I was ambiguous in terms of whether or not it applies is consistent with the context of the entire statute and the purpose of the statute. That is where the ambiguity lies.
Mr. Granberg, if you could explain under 708.811 the set of facts that you think the legislature was intending to address with respect to burglary in the second degree, what would be, in your view, the conduct that they were attempting to address? In other words, it seems as though this is referring to a place that's a public place where an individual's told that they're not authorized to be there, right?
Yes,
And then with that understanding, a person commits the offense of burglary in the second degree if they intentionally enter or remain unlawfully in a building with intent to commit therein a crime against a person or against property rights. So if they go into a public building and they are in some way instructed that they're not entitled to be there, they can, under some scenario, be charged with burglary in the second degree, right? That's anticipated by the statute.
If in the building they go into a separately secured or occupied unit of the building, or they move into a building, part of the building, which is not open to the public. So I believe your question was, what is the purpose of the burglary statute that the legislature intended? And we put forth that burglary.
But this refers to an area open to the public, right? If the person defies a lawful order not to enter or remain, it's open to the public.
Correct, and this is where it becomes ambiguous with the legislative purpose.
Okay, but there must be some scenario, factual scenario, that actually applies here where a person can be a person who goes into a public building and is instructed not to be there, commits an act that means that they're guilty of burglary in the second degree. What would it be? I mean, in this case, you've got a situation in which I guess you're arguing that there wasn't necessarily a lawful order, but in any case, if you concede that there's a lawful order,
I understand that that is the natural reaction that I think one would have when we hear the facts of this case.
Are you saying that when you the act that's intended when the person goes into the building where they're told to leave has to be something more serious than theft? Does it have to be an assault? I mean, I don't see any specification in the statute or the legislative history about just this distinction that you're referring to, so maybe you could help me with that.
The gravamen of the burglary offense is the unauthorized entry together with the intent to commit a crime against a person or property. So,
right, and in this case, we
invasion with the requisite intent, that is the harm that is created by the act of burglary. And that is
what act would qualify? What intentional act that's of a criminal nature would qualify under this statute?
Well, the focus of the burglary statute is not actually on the act intended to be committed within the building. And the fact under the burglary statute, it doesn't even have to be committed. It's just the intent.
Yeah. Can you give me any fact situation you can think of where somebody might be convicted of burglary in the second degree when they go into a public building and they defy a lawful order to not be there? And they have, you know, the intent to commit a crime? Can you think of any situation?
I can think of whatever crime they intended to commit, or...
Let's say they intend to go in and steal a bunch of meat.
Then they could be prosecuted for attempted theft.
Why not burglary?
Because burglary, we have to focus on the actual entry itself, the actual invasion itself, and whether or not, you know, that invasion in terms of this commercial premises, which is not explicitly stated in the burglary statute, whether or not that type of...
Well, isn't the invasion specifically defined? It's an invasion to a public space at the time at the premises open to the time to the public. And then the person defies a lawful order not to enter or remain. So they go in there, they defy the order not to enter or remain, and then they have an intent to commit a crime. And you seem to be suggesting if they intend to commit a crime that's trespass, that it wouldn't qualify. But is there another crime that would qualify that they're intending to commit?
I don't want to get off in too amazed with the plain language, but I would just note that a building and premises open to the public are not equivalent. So, before we even make that jump, we have to accept that building, as used in the term of burglary, is that equal to commercial premises simply open to the public? And by the mere nature of the definition of building, together with the enumerated structures that are in that building definition, we would say that building is not a part of premises. So, looks like my
time. All right, Mr. Kramberg, you have a couple of moments remaining, so we'll hear it this time from Mr. Tsushima, and then we'll hear your rebuttal later. Thank you. Mr. Tsushima.
May it please the Court, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Stephen Tsushima on behalf of the State of Hawaii. Good morning, Chief Justice.
Good morning.
And Associate Justices, good morning as well. I'm going to set aside what my argument was going to be, and I don't want to just spew off what I had previously written in my submissions. I'd like to address what appears to be the court's concern, and that is whether the facts of this case fall under the lawful order not to enter or remain. And when you look at lawful order at first, it does look like awkward wording, especially when compared to other wordings used in the statute for burglary as well as trespass. But when you look at it, you just look at what would that mean? What it would mean if you don't follow it, you're in violation of law. So when we look at this, does it fit under the trespass warning? Well, absolutely, because if you don't follow the trespass warning, you're going to be in violation of trespass in the second degree.
Does the statute allow, getting back to the question I asked Mr. Kramberg, the statute says a warning statement advising the person that the person's presence is no longer desired on the property for a period of 1 year. So how do we get from there to saying you can't be on any property that we own? It says on the property. It doesn't say on any property we own. Although previously, before that, it says person remains enters commercial premises after reasonable warning or request to leave by the owner or lessee of the commercial premises. But it says the warning statement is on no longer desired on the property. So are you saying that GGP, General Growth Properties, could say your presence is no longer desired, not only on Ala Moana, but on any shopping center we own on this, in this entire state?
Yes.
And that is, that qualifies under this statute?
Yes, because I don't read in any...
The property includes any property owned by an owner anywhere in the state?
Correct.
Commercial premises?
Correct.
How do we get there?
Seema, doesn't the commentary to 814 specifically cover the situation where store owners did gave a warning on a particular store, and then the shoplifter would go to another store? And so they and the commentary indicates that they wanted a warning to be able to cover different premises.
That is my understanding, that it was not intended to be limited to the one property that the person was, otherwise the incident or whatever that brought upon.
So the commentary would supersede the plain language of the statute?
Not supersede it, but it would help explain otherwise what would be unclear to this court as to whether it encompassed such a warrant or such a, I guess.
What do you have to say about the trial judge's comment that he had problems because it was a different store, that it might have been different if it were the same store?
Whose comment was that?
The trial judge said that. Well, I might have, if it were the same store, I might have decided differently, but this was a different store.
Yeah, I just didn't feel that was pertinent to the situation, because I think it's ignoring the property owner's right to exclude. So when there's an individual that you don't want on your properties, that it's ignoring the individual's right, and what the statute is otherwise allowing is the right to exclude a person.
Well, what about the, okay, he gets a warning, and it's specifically called a warning. It's not called an order. So two questions. One, it's not called an order. It's called a warning. And two, he's told if you come back again, you'll be prosecuted for trespassing. So does notice, and I'm actually asking you this, is that, does he need notice? Or is that just one of those, it's against the law, you should know it's against the law? But does he need notice that he's going to be, by the way, if you come back and you steal something, it's going to be a burg? Or are they limited to what he could be charged? Is it a lawful order if it's just a warning, and can it suffice to support a burglary charge when he's just being told that he's going to be charged with trespassing?
Okay, I'll handle the first part first. So yes, it is a lawful order for the explanation that I was giving, that it's a violation, that if you violate it, it's going to be in violation of the law, lawful order. So, and he would be in violation of criminal trespass too. As to whether he has to be given notice to if he commits a crime against person or property, if he violates that, if he violates criminal trespass too, no, he doesn't have to be given any kind of notice, no more than anybody else would have to be given notice that if they're intentionally entered, remain unlawfully anywhere, that they could also be guilty of another crime. In other words, he is given notice. He knows that if he violates it, he's going to be entering, remaining unlawfully in the building.
Okay, so let's say someone gets a restraining order against a batterer, and let's say that the defendant, the person against whom the restraining order is issued, sees the person in the supermarket and, you know, approaches her, starts talking to her in violation of the restraining order.
Okay.
Is that burglary?
No, I don't think.
Why not? It was a lawful order.
But in a building.
It remains unlawfully in a building when the order says you can't be within 100 yards of the person.
Right.
And you see her, you approach her, you start talking to her in violation of the restraining order. Why isn't that burglary?
Because the way I read it is in... I don't mean any disrespect when I say that, but I feel like it obviously means entering and remaining unlawfully in the building. You're not supposed to be in the building unlawfully. Not that you're unlawfully within reach of the person, as that fact pattern would lend itself to, but it's the building itself which you are not allowed to be lawfully.
Okay. So let's say that the restraining order does say that you can't enter, and she works at the supermarket, and you can't approach, you can't enter her workplace. And the restraining order says, if you violate this restraining order, it's a misdemeanor punishable with up to 1 year in prison, which is how people are advised. And so then the person, the respondent, enters the supermarket to speak to his ex. Is that burglary?
No, I still don't believe that that constitutes it, because I think that goes against the spirit of the law and of the burglary statute. And because
how then does this case not go against the spirit of the law? The trespass order of a commercial premises.
Because again, I think it's on the focus of the property owner and the property owner's rights to exclude. I think that's what the burglary offense has always been about.
Okay, assuming that, going to Justice Pollack's hypothetical, does it seem the compliant with the legislature's desire to exclude somebody from your property? Suppose it were the same property, or suppose the loss prevention officer said, I knew this guy. I saw him before. He stole some candy before. And I knew that we had issued him a trespass warning, and I just followed him around for 45 minutes until he stole something, and then I arrested him. Now, how does that comply with trying to exclude, one, people off your premises, if that's the goal, not to get them for a burglary, but exclude them off the premises, and to allow a loss prevention officer to conflate a desire to keep undesirables off your property into a burglary?
I think that would be a problem, and I think if we had those facts in front of us, I would find that problematic. From a practical standpoint, though.
So the statute doesn't apply based on the length of time the person is followed in the store?
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if we had a fact pattern where some LPO had allowed the person in, had known that there was a trespass warning given to them, and intentionally followed them around to wait to see if a crime was committed, I think we would have a problematic situation of whether the burglary statute would apply.
Under what theory? I mean, what would be the unconstitutional as applied, or, I mean,
It would counter the purpose of, you didn't want the person to be on the premises. At that point, you're negating the desire to exclude. At that point, you're including them on the premises.
So every single one of these cases, there's going to have to be an evaluation by the court to determine whether or not the security guard was aware, or I guess should have been aware, whether they checked their computer system or whether they, you know, knew about whether or not that person before they let the person remain in the market.
No, that won't be necessary. And part of it is from a practical standpoint. You know, back in the day, I did work retail. I worked at a Liberty House. What is Macy's now, but back in the day, it was Liberty House. And one of the things we were told is, I wasn't an LPL, I was just one of the cashier people, but we were told if there was somebody that we knew either was given a trespass warrant from prior shoplifting, we don't approach them, but we do let the LPO know to tell them that you're not allowed on the premises. That's actually, in a practical sense, what's done. And we do have 11 of these cases pending on appeal. All 11 of those cases...
Is this on the record that you're about to express to us?
Can this court take judicial
notice?
About
these 11 other cases?
Can the court take judicial notice of the 11 cases on appeal?
Well,
I would think it could.
Well, we'll accept your representation, and whether we take judicial notice or not, we can decide later. But your point is, there are broader implications to this case, right, Mr. Sushi?
Well, and to answer the question of whether in how these trespass warnings, I think it was an issue brought before when they're given, or whether they're just, you know, see a homeless person say, you know, we don't want you there. On every one of those 11 cases, the reason for the trespass warning, shoplifting. And
so
then they're given a trespass warning.
So does that mean that, is the argument that then this statute should not apply if it isn't underlying shoplifting, but if it's just been a homeless person who, and I think the legislature called them undesirables, and in fact, the trespass warning uses the term, your presence is no longer desired, or something of that nature.
Well,
so is that going to be another... exception to the statute that if it's not a shoplifting underlying activity, that the statute won't apply?
No. Well, two things to that. No. Well, one is from a practical standpoint, that's just not the way that it's applied. There's never been a case brought up before this court, and if that case does, I guess you would analyze it again. But when you do come to that analysis, my second point is, no, that wouldn't be a problem because that's what the statute allows it, and that's what burglary.
Well, does the statute allow it? Because I think one of the premises of your application of this statute is that if you give a person this trespass warning, that returning to it means that the person has not only unlawfully entered upon commercial premises after a reasonable warning to leave, but they've also defied a lawful order. In other words, the scenario that the prosecution in this case is arguing is that when a person enters after a reasonable warning or request to leave, it not only violates that definition in the commercial trespass second, but it also defies the lawful order. And my difficulty with that is a couple. One, you're saying this one activity defies or violates all of the burglary unlawful, but the statute itself specifically says, for the purposes of this paragraph, reasonable warning or request means a request communicated right. So in other words, under this statute, if you enter or remain unlawfully upon commercial premises after reasonable warning or request to leave, your activity violates this statute by its terms, its constraint. What the argument is somehow it's transformed into something else concurrently and becomes a lawful order. And that doesn't seem at all what the legislature intended. In fact, it seems positively not what they intended because there's no discussion of that intent when they enacted these statutes.
That the legislature didn't intend under lawful order for a trespass warning to apply?
There's no discussion that I'm aware of when they enacted the statute or the amendments in the 1990s that this statute would involve a burglary.
And then, so what do we do then? Well, Justice Rector brought a proposal 123, Hawaii 326 says this: this court derives legislative intent primarily from the language of the statute and follows the general rule that in the absence of clear legislative intent to the contrary, the plain meaning of the language will be given effect.
So I think the question is there an ambiguity because of 708.814's reference to, for the purposes of this paragraph, the definition of what a warning would be? Does that reflect an intent or at least create an ambiguity or a suggestion that the legislature only intended that warning to apply in the criminal trespass context and not in the burglary context?
No, there's nothing suggestive that it could only be used as a criminal trespass. And what this court should do in interpreting it is, of course, look at the statute together. And when you look at 708.800, what else would this court be thinking that the legislator meant when he said lawful order not to enter and remain? How is that not a trespass warning?
If there is an ambiguity, what's your response to the argument that there's nothing in the legislative history to indicate an intent to have this conduct prosecuted as a felony, burglary?
Then we look at the plain language, and the plain language of 708.800 of enter remains unlawfully is referring to a trespass warning. That language can't be referring to anything else other than a trespass warning.
I'm sorry, but I think that the first burglary case over which I presided as a circuit court judge was a case in which a woman obtained a restraining order against her battering ex, and then he broke into her house and assaulted her, and the charge was burglary.
Mm-hmm. And that fits what I've been saying. That's the right of the person.
That's quite a difference. One's a court order, specifically where someone's defied a court order. The second one has to do with a special statute that was enacted to allow what they couldn't even arrest because it was a simple trespass without the statute. And the legislature basically created this statute and created the warning and created all of this so that a person could be arrested and so that a commercial trespass offense was created. There's nothing about burglary being created.
I'm really curious in terms of your 11 cases. Those are First Circuit?
Those are First Circuit.
Are you aware of cases from other circuits?
With regard to that. Beating up on appeal? Sorry, I don't.
Or charging these as burglaries?
Yes, Washington.
I'm sorry?
Yes, Washington has. And they've.
I said other circuits. I meant circuits within the state of Hawaii.
Sorry, no.
Do other prosecutors take this position?
Oh, what's that?
That this is a burglary.
I haven't been in touch with the other counties. So I don't know if they are, don't know if they're not.
So could you come back to the legislative history? So if there is an ambiguity, how would you argue that the legislative history supports the point of view that this should be prosecuted or can be prosecuted as a felony?
Sorry, I didn't follow the question.
If there's an ambiguity in the statute, your argument is plain language, don't go any further. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, but if we disagree with that respectfully and conclude that there is an ambiguity, how would you argue or do you believe the legislative history supports your point of view that this, indeed, there was a legislative intent to prosecute this conduct as a burglary as opposed to a trespass? Is there anything in there that supports that argument? And if not, what would your assessment be? Is that fatal to your argument or not? Not relevant or what?
No, I don't think that's fatal to my argument. In fact, we haven't talked much about the development of burglary within this state. And one of the things I did want to point out was that if you look at the 1968 version of our burglary statute, under HRS 726.1, it did include, amongst other things, a store, a room, building, store, mill, warehouse. So one of the things specifically our legislator had in mind was the protection of stores, commercial establishments. So that belies petitioner's position that somehow commercial buildings were excluded and was never in the minds of the legislature. It was specifically in the minds of this legislature. They mentioned store. And what they did when they changed the law in 71 is they expanded it. They didn't shrink it. They made it a building. They made it broader.
Mr. Tsushima, while you're on the issue of interpreting the language in both statutes and looking at the legislative history, let's assume the legislative history was specifically intended, as you were saying, to allow for a notice to apply to not just the store where the trespass takes place, but other properties that are owned by the same store owner. Assume that for a second and return to the idea of looking at the actual language, the plain language. And help me with this, because there is plain language I'm looking at 708.814, that gets pretty specific about this idea of a warning. And I'm thinking about this in relation to this lawful order language in 708.811. So if we start off with 708.814, the empowerment of the store owner seems to be evident here, as you were saying. This is giving a power to the store owner to create a misdemeanor by giving what's called a reasonable warning. And a significant power, and I presumably the legislature can do that to establish this as an element, a reasonable warning. But then there's a specific definition about what a reasonable warning is, right? It goes into some detail about advising the person that the person's presence is no longer desired, right? Specifically, talking about the warning. And presumably to do what you're talking about, empower the store owner, give them power to essentially use a criminal sanction to make sure they don't come back. But then if you look at 708.811, we're talking now not about a misdemeanor, right? This is a felony. And in some ways it seems like there's a sensible crafting of the language by the legislature, because then the legislature seems to get a bit more serious. Right? The legislature talks about defying a lawful order. Mm-hmm. Well, lawful order isn't back here in 708.814, when we're talking about the misdemeanor, it seems like it's a lot more loose, right? Because this can actually be a warning that's given by, it doesn't have to be so-called lawful order, it just has to be a warning. And then it's specifically defined, and as Justice Pollack says, the legislature sort of goes out of its way to say they are intending to give a specific definition in the statute because they say, for the purposes of this paragraph, when in a way it might be saying for the purposes of this misdemeanor that we're creating where we're giving power to the landowner to be able to, in a way, create a crime if the person doesn't listen to us. So just looking at the plain language, it seems you might interpret it to mean that there needs to be more of something, I guess you could say, more of a strong statement on the part of the law. Maybe that anticipates the court, but a lawful order not to enter or remain. So I'm not sure what your response is to that, but it seems to me that there might have been a legislative intent to be more strict when it comes in terms of a, you know, so-called warning or lawful order, more strict for 708.811.
I'm not sure what you mean by more strict.
Well, you know, it's a different definition because a lawful order is something that I think is a more direct statement about the fact that the person who's being accused of a crime has done something that is considered to be in violation of the law. Mm-hmm. You know, if you a lawful order would be a directive as to what you should or should not do under the law, whereas a reasonable warning is more of something that comes from private property owner, maybe? Is that a lawful order when the private property owner says, don't come back?
Yeah, I think it says, as long as it's one that is made, that if you're in violation of, you're going to be in violation of.
Okay, so from your point of view, the legislative intent is the same when the word lawful order is used and reasonable warning. They mean the same thing.
No, I don't think I'm saying that's the same thing.
What's the difference then? Well, what would the intent be to create that different language by the legislature?
As I stated earlier, I did find that when they used the word lawful order, that it was awkward and that there is no other reference to it. So I do see the distinguish that you're pointing out, that there are two totally separate words being used. But at the same time, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, I think the reasonable, the obvious reading of that language is just that if you're in violation of such, you're going to be in violation of the law. It's that simple. It doesn't have to be a court order or anything larger than that. It's just, and again, I can't help but think every time I read it, what is this otherwise referring to? If not a trespass warning, I can't even.
Like I said, a restraining order is a lawful order. So are stay away orders from police, I believe, from law enforcement, stay away orders, or perhaps bail conditions, orders of from a judge saying you can't be here, you know, as a condition of bail, or perhaps even as a condition of probation. It seems like there's a lot of lawful orders that are issued restricting people from access from certain locations.
Well, could and to make the point again that Justice McKenna's making, what about a conviction? I mean, we don't have a conviction for trespass in the second degree, right? But if there is a conviction for trespass in the second degree, in a way, that's a lawful order. It's not just a warning. Mm-hmm. Maybe that makes your point also. It would be different then. But we don't have a conviction here, right?
And it's possible that the legislature did intend to include the circumstances you're stating, Justice McKenna. I just hadn't considered it for that purpose. When I had read it for lawful order not to enter remain on the property, so I would have to, you know, concede that. I'm not sure if it includes those orders that you're referring to. I'm not saying that it necessarily doesn't. I'm just saying that the way I read that is a lawful order not to enter remain, like specifically as to properties. And that's what the burglary.
The statute calls it a reasonable warning or request, not an lawful order. And I do have a question. You know, it says that reasonable request, warning or request, may contain, but is not limited to the following information. And obviously, I have an issue with the property issue, but. It also does say, and that the reasonable request may contain information that violation of the warning, not lawful order, the warning will subject the person to arrest and prosecution for trespassing, and that criminal trespass in the second degree is a petty misdemeanor. And it seems like maybe this information is not required, but the legislature is suggesting that that's what's supposed to be in there. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that your order, this order, doesn't even have that information.
Which information was that?
Criminal trespass, that it's a petty misdemeanor, right? Does it have that? I'm sorry, I thought it didn't.
I thought
perhaps
it did. I'm sorry. It did? I don't have it in front of me.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I thought it did.
Well, and I guess that Justice McKinnon is right. It actually doesn't say a petty misdemeanor. It just says, prosecution for trespassing pursuant to Section 708.
Yeah, and that's the part I thought was the necessary part that was required.
But it does have the statute number.
Yes, thank you.
So why would the legislature before it? It has a very specific apparent purpose or statutory scheme that it's set up to lay the groundwork for criminal trespass in the second degree, or very particular order, definition of what the order should look like, a particular sanction. Isn't it reasonable to expect that if the legislature wanted that order to serve as the basis for a felony prosecution, that it would explicitly say so in 708-800?
Well, no, not necessarily. It's because again, just looking at the plain language is saying what they're expecting. They're expecting to show that you intentionally entered or remained unlawfully. That's it. I wouldn't expect them to actually make reference to trespassing in the second degree necessarily. I think that'd just be a duplicative of that language.
So under your analysis, if a store owner tells someone to leave and doesn't even give a written warning, right? Written, it says leave, and they don't. And then the person comes in and, well, let's say the store owner says, leave, get out of here. I don't really want you in my premises. And I want you to get out of here. And on the way out, the person grabs a Reese's peanut butter cup. Like, I think the first violation here was stealing a Reese's, right? Is that burglary?
No, I don't think that would fit it, because then that wouldn't fit the trespass in the second or any other.
That's not a lawful order to leave? That oral order is not a lawful order by the owner of the premises to leave the premises?
Not by the definition that I had given, because it has to be a one that which, if you didn't follow, you'd be in violation of the law. So if the store owner had just told them to leave, then they're not in violation of the law. They haven't been in violation of the law. In other words, they wouldn't even be in violation of the criminal trespass in the second degree.
I'm sorry, a store owner who tells someone to leave their premises and the person refuses, that person can't be prosecuted for trespass.
Well, I guess simple, it would be a different trespass. I guess maybe a simple trespass.
But he left, and no.
And then he left, no, then he wouldn't be in violation of the law under the burglary statute.
Okay. But what if he refused to leave and then stayed there and grabbed a Reese's and started eating it?
I'm still not clear whether he'd be in violation of any trespass at that point.
Well, he'd be trespassing, right, at that point? And then he stole a Reese's, so then it becomes burglary?
Oh, I guess he would be guilty under simple trespass. So, yes, it could fit that circumstance. Because I think...
Why isn't that burglary, then, under your...
Why is that burglary?
Why isn't that not? Is that also not burglary?
No, sorry, I'm correcting what our I'm saying that I was wrong in saying that wouldn't be burglary. That would be burglary under simple trespass, because it would be a simple trespass and then the theft. So it would qualify.
Okay.
Well, anything else, Mr. Tsushima?
No, this time.
Very well, and we'll hear. Thank you for your argument. We'll hear now for Mr. Kramberg in rebuttal.
Briefly, in regard to the legislative history of the prior burglary statute under Chapter 726. The definition of burglary did include store. It also included building. So when the legislature then rewrote the statute, they took out store and left buildings. That would suggest an interpretation, a specific choice to exclude stores. It could be argued. Took out store and left it as building. In regards to, well, questioning is a lawful order, a notice of trespass. I think in the questions that have been raised, we see the difficulties with applying such a standard.
Well, Mr. Granberg, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but let's assume that it's not a warning. Let's assume that first, in this case, Mr. King was convicted. So there's, a conviction for trespass. Would that become a lawful order that would qualify? I know your argument is that it wouldn't qualify because the burglary statute is not intended to apply to stores, but let's assume that it did apply to stores. Then would you have a lawful order as a result of a conviction for criminal trespass in the second degree?
I don't believe so, because I still think there would be an ambiguity in terms of what orders apply to burglary. It's confusing to me, and I would suggest that, you know, we were talking about explicit, the legislature being explicit in terms of, you know, their language, and it was referenced earlier, wouldn't the legislature have included the language in terms of notice of trespass that it can be used to elevate this petty misdemeanor to a felony if it's committed along with shoplifting, or the legislature could have elevated shoplifting. If you commit shoplifting within a store and you also have a notice of trespass and you're in violation of that, that could be a felony, which they actually did in theft in the second degree. In Act 228, 1998, the legislature specifically elevated theft in the second degree to a Class C felony if it was an agricultural product on premises which are appears displayed signage of private property. So the legislature has showed through their explicit language when they want to elevate a petty offense with a trespass, they specifically do it. And they've done it, they did it twice actually. And there's legislative history with the Act 228, the session laws, 1998, and Conference Committee Report 145, also in Act 182, Session Laws 2005, that would be the Senate Standing Committee Report 1359, they did it in situations with agricultural equipment, and in fact elevated it to a Class C felony, even for property, theft of property value from over $100 up into including $20,000, if it was done either on premises that were enclosed or fenced, or in violation of signs of no trespass, it became elevated. So,
what was the other instance? You mentioned two instances. One where they elevated it from trespass to burglary was the word to include theft of agricultural products. Or what was the other instance?
Aquaculture.
Aquaculture? Okay. Thank you.
So, you know, and if they are to be the same, lawful order and notice of trespass, then what was the need for the criminal trespass statute? What was the need for a reasonable order in the first place if it already included a lawful order?
I don't know if you've had more chance to think about it, but I'm still reaching for, in your view, what the conduct is that is the subject of burglary in the second degree.
Well, it would be the unauthorized entry with intent to commit some other crime.
Other than what?
It can be any crime against a person or property rights.
Only personal property rights?
A person or crime. If you're
would that include take meat?
Yes, that would be a crime against property, but it would be a specific crime if it was under $100. The legislature has indicated that in terms of that level of harm.
Wasn't that what happened here? There was
which is a petty misdemeanor. Sorry.
Yeah, it seemed like that's what happened here. There was an unlawful entry.
Exactly. Yes.
After a warning, and somebody took some meat. So why?
Because the underlying criminal acts, shoplifting under $100 and criminal trespass in the second degree, are already being punished under other statutes, other lesser crimes, with, you know, statutes of criminal trespass in the second degree and shoplifting appear to cover those situations. And it is not clear that the legislature wanted them to take those two separate acts they committed together and then elevate them to a Class C felony. And they've shown in the past when they want to do that, when there's a need, they do that with the theft in the second degree statute, which specifically enhances theft of agriculture equipment, enhances theft of aquaculture equipment, if it's done premises that are enclosed or premises that are open to the public, but there's a private property or notice trespass sign. So just, you know, burglary is a serious offense. It has serious real world consequences. Maximum jail of 60 days versus 5 years prison. And we would just submit with such serious consequences and the ambiguity, we would ask that it's for the legislature, not the courts, not for the state, to strike the delicate balance between those grave crimes punishable as felonies and those lesser infractions punishable here as only as petty misdemeanors. And that balance requires value judgments that should be made by people's representatives.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cranberg, Mr. Tsushima. Thank you for your arguments today. The court will take this matter under advisement. And I wanted to note we've been joined today by a number of JAG officers and enlisted personnel who are visiting the judiciary. Thank you for joining us for this argument, and thank you for your service to our country. We appreciate it.